Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The third hour. What's happening? Tinky and Tierney coming in from our Rocket Mortgage studio. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. What's going on? Very, very busy Tuesday here, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. We'll get into the Eagles in a moment, but hey, listen, they reacted to it, and this is what I've been calling for, so you better believe I'm going to read it on the air, and it's not much, but it doesn't have to be. The Nets have finally addressed Kyrie Irving's situation. This one's from Adrian Wojnarowski, a little Woj tweet moments before. And let's see, Nets GM Sean Marks issued a statement on Kyrie Irving saying in part, quote, Kyrie remains away from the team due to personal reasons. A date of his return has yet to be finalized. In the meantime, we will continue to stay focused on our organizational goals, end quote. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I needed. I'm not going to critique. No, it's not deep enough. There's not enough details. That's all I was calling for. You had to say something.
Yeah.
Now I can move on.
Now they let it linger for too long, and now it's not in the book, so to speak, but it is now fully in Kyrie's court. Kyrie's got to come out and say whatever he's going to say at some point.
Correct, and that's the next step. All right, so there's a lot to unpack here with the Philadelphia Eagles. As we said yesterday, you know, it is hard to go from being a Super Bowl champ. Granted, your franchise quarterback didn't win the Super Bowl, but
yeah.
To have that guy on the roster, to have this undeniable energy about you, and to so quickly just have it disassembled, mostly because you made a lot of bad moves, and that falls on Howie Roseman. Peterson botched a lot of things as well. Before we get to Lincoln Riley,
mm-hmm.
Do you see it as simple as the Eagles choosing Wentz over Peterson as a starting point?
No. I think it was a lot more complicated than that. And BT, honestly, we started pointing this out 6-7 weeks ago when, you know, he made the decision about Carson Wentz, or he was being asked about decision regarding Carson Wentz's poor play and whether or not he would go with Jalen Hurts just to bring some kind of, I don't know, hope, you know, positivity,
spark,
whatever
yeah.
it may be.
Yep.
And he just wouldn't communicate, right? You remember the conversations with the media was I don't know, it was like truncated and terse and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It was unfair to Jalen Hurts.
Agreed. And Carson,
I thought
Carson Wentz as well, because it was just kind of like, you're not committed to the guy you just paid money, but then you're flip-flopping, or not flip-flopping, you're wishy-washy with Jalen Hurts, who you just drafted, and it was a complete mismanagement of the situation to the point where Carson Wentz even was like, dude, you've ruined my relationship with you. I want to be traded, right? And so I think there was a communication issue internally, and then meaning in the locker room with the players, and then also externally with the organization. You know, from what you start hearing, Doug Peterson wasn't communicating anything to anybody. He was just kind of unilaterally making decisions about what he was going to do, and that rubbed people the wrong way inside the locker room and outside of the locker room. And so when it came down to it at the end of the year, and they had a sit down with Jeffrey Lurie, who for weeks had been disgruntled with how things were going.
Can't blame them.
Right? And they're like, dude, what's going on here? Yeah, you're not communicating with anybody internally or with us. So what the heck is going on here? Uh-huh. And he got asked this question on Sunday down in Florida. And I guess the answer wasn't satisfactory. Now, obviously, Jeffrey Lurie has a long tenure there, early 90s. I can't remember when he bought the team, but he's been there for a while. And, you know, Doug Peterson brought him that long, elusive Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, if you're not communicating with people and you're kind of dismissive about it, you're not going to last. I don't care how good you think you are at what you do.
Not in the NFL. That might work in college if you want to run a dictatorship.
Yeah.
And you've got the juice to do it, which I wouldn't recommend, but you know, maybe you can squeeze a little something out of that, but that's not flying in the NFL. There's no way that's going down. It's just not happening.
Not at all. So, but now they're scrambling, BT.
They are scrambling. And it looks like they're scrambling in the direction of Lincoln Riley, which would validate what you just said, that getting rid of Peterson is not necessarily done in favor of Wentz, because there's no way you're going to bring in Lincoln Riley to be Carson Wentz's coach with the design of, you know, rehabilitating Carson Wentz and the guy who, you know, was phenomenal with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
Just sits and watches.
Yeah.
So I don't know what – I don't know – you know, you talk about jobs that are appealing and jobs that are toxic, right? There's very few – let's face it, if it's appealing, the job's probably not going to be open.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more toxic jobs year to year than there are appealing jobs. But to me, this year, this might be the one year where that's not true. To me, there's a lot of appealing jobs. There's a dearth of toxic jobs, but quite frankly, this Eagles job feels toxic right now.
It does.
It really does. It just feels messy and uneven and just
Well, you have an
without old, resolution.
Yeah,
still.
You have an old offensive line. I'm just looking at some of these guys now that are here that have been around, from Lane Johnson and Jason Peters. I don't even know if he's even is going to be on the team next year. But Jason Kelsey, he's not young. He's 34 years old.
Yeah,
right. And you know,
why am I forgetting the guy who hurt his knee last year, ripped it up in the summer, missed the whole season? One of the guards.
Oh,
right guard?
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
I forget his name.
Yeah, I can't.
He's younger, so you've got him coming back.
He's coming back, but you still got to rebuild that offensive line. You got a quarterback who's making a ton of money, who's not guaranteed to be the starter, right? You got a $100 million quarterback that's got to compete for a starting job next year. I mean, think about this. You're right. It's not Brandon Brooks, by the way, BT. Brandon Brooks. He did rip up his knee early.
Yeah.
And so the job isn't really appealing because there's a lot of fixes that need to happen quickly. You got to get better on the defensive side of the ball as well. You know, maybe you spent a little bit too much money over there that didn't pan out. It's not an appealing job per se, but it is a major media market. And if you have success and you can come in with, say, if you're Lincoln Riley and have Jalen Hurts, who completely understands what offense you're going to try to install, you might find success right away, like Arizona, like Cliff Kingsbury did with Arizona with Kyler Murray, simply because the offense was easy for the quarterback to pick up.
Yeah.
Right? That's why you look at that particular, you know, potential hire and say that one might make it okay. All the other ones, there's a lot of question marks around them.
And here's the other thing too. There is an obvious air of desperation around Jeffrey Lurie right now, you know, for obvious reasons. You just want to end these shenanigans and just kind of get back on the road to respectability.
Yeah.
And if you're a coach coming in, I mean, you're just holding him hostage in terms of getting a contract, especially for somebody like Lincoln Riley. Sure, I'll come. What if Matt Rhule gets 7 years? Give me eight. You know, give me the out so I can leave whenever I want. But you can't get rid of me. And if you do, you owe me every penny, 8 years, 9 years. I mean, you could ask for the moon. Maybe you get a portion of it.
Yeah.
The other jobs, think about this team. Like the other jobs, the Jaguars job is appealing because of Trevor Lawrence and draft equity from the for the Jalen Ramsey trade. The Jets job is appealing. Second pick, a lot of draft picks as well. The Falcons job to me is a tricky one because of Matt Ryan's age.
Yeah.
Same with Matt Stafford, depending upon what they do at that position. But the Texans have one of the best quarterbacks in football, and he's 25 and he's locked up through 2025. That's Deshaun Watson. You can make the case that the Eagles, it's the worst job right now.
Yeah. No.
Is that an erroneous statement?
No, I don't think it is, because they're in cap hell. obviously, as well.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to make some really tough decisions about some veteran players. So you're starting over, but you're starting young. It's not like you're going to bring in free agents with the cap situation that they're in. You got a quarterback controversy. I mean, this is a bona fide controversy. We haven't seen one in a while, to be honest with you, in the NFL.
Yeah, it's been a while. I used to like those growing
up. Me too. But we haven't
seen always had them on your bad teams.
Oh, dude, all the time. Exactly. It's like, oh, is it going to be Dave Brown or is it going to be Kent Graham?
Or the winner of the competition,
Danny Cannell. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maddox. Yeah, Maddox came there for a minute, right? Wasn't Maddox there?
I think he was right before me. I think, yeah, he was there, but he was right before me.
He may have been before you. That's what I meant. He may have been before.
But, yeah, so it's not fun when you have a quarterback controversy.
No. Especially when you have a guy who was great.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's even more disconcerting. Like, why did we suddenly have a quarterback controversy on our hands here?
Yeah.
How did this happen again?
That's why you no longer have a head coach.
Yeah,
in
I
Doug
know.
Peterson, because he kind of not – he earned that one. He earned the firing, as we said yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, but this is a job – look, if I'm a college coach and I have a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, I'm absolutely looking at the Philadelphia Eagles because you're seeing it work a little bit, you know, in fits and starts around the NFL. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to be turn into Kyler Murray type, you know. Mm. I don't know if he's going to turn into Lamar Jackson type. I don't know.
I don't see that.
But, look, college coaches are – it's the only way they're going to be successful in the NFL. They're not going to come to the NFL and all of a sudden become different, you know, offensive minds. You know what I mean? I don't see that working. You know, the only – because I don't remember Matt Rhule at Temple – I don't remember what kind of offense he ran at Baylor, but I do know.
I think it was a little vertical. Robbie Anderson played for him.
Yeah.
You know, the Panthers now.
But either
way. They threw the ball downfield to Temple.
I knew that he established and he hired a really good staff in bringing in Joe Brady, who is now getting head coaching, you know, looks himself as offensive coordinator. Obviously, he orchestrated the LSU national championship a year ago. So, I mean, it's all about how you build a staff and bring in the right players and right coaches for your players. And some college coaches can do that. Some can't.
You know, and you just mentioned Joe Brady. He's an interesting candidate for the reasons but that we know, LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first month of the season, the Carolina Panthers look pretty good.
Yeah.
Joe Brady may be getting an unfair elevation here.
Maybe. I think he's living a little bit off of what happened at LSU.
Feels that way a little bit.
Yeah, because they couldn't scheme.
I'm not saying he can't be good, but.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you're hiring him, you're hiring him to scheme you into victories.
Yeah.
And they couldn't scheme themselves into anything at the end of the season.
How many touchdowns does Teddy Bridgewater throw? 15? Like 14?
It's mid-teens, that's for sure. Yeah.
I think only Cam and of course, my guy had less. I'm not saying he can't be good because what he did with Brady, with Burrow was
phenomenal.
But
he's also still young.
No, he's young. He's very young. Absolutely. So, you know, and by the way, is there any guarantee Howie Roseman's going to stick this thing out? I mean, does Jeffrey Lurie view Howie Roseman as a true asset? Is he disenchanted? What's going on with that?
He does. I think Jeffrey Lurie loves Howie Roseman and he wants him there to help him make these decisions. But who knows how that all plays itself out in the long run. Either way, Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman are now hiring their third coach in 7 years, which is odd, because there's a Super Bowl title in there. It doesn't really fit with the narrative. You win a Super Bowl title less than, you know, four years ago. And now you're hiring another coach, and it's the third one in 7 years. It's kind of weird, man.
Well, and Howie Roseman's been there through all of it. So, yeah. I mean, why does he keep getting spared?
Yeah, because Jeffrey Lurie loves him.
All right, well, there's your answer. Simple as that. I got you.
It is what it is.
I got you. I mean, when it goes awry in Philly with their coaches, it goes awry.
Yeah. Yeah,
Chip Kelly went awry. Doug Peterson went awry.
Yep,
it goes awry.
It does. The only one that didn't was Andy Reid,
of course,
Andy, because we knew how
and
good
they didn't even appreciate him. Fans,
no, he didn't. We knew how good he was, but it just was a. I don't know. It got to an untenable situation.
Yeah.
After being there for as long as he was.
Well, let's break a little bit early for once. Something we never do on this show. I'm not even sure TV's equipped to go to break early because I never throw to break early, but they're resilient enough to handle it. There we go. Seth Joyner, former Philadelphia Eagle, terrific linebacker back in the day. He's got some salient thoughts on what went down, who should they hire, what's going on in the building. We'll talk to Seth coming up next and get to the bottom of what in the world is wrong in Philly, and more specifically, how do you fix it? That's coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, what's going on? Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. So where did it go awry for Philly, specifically Peterson? How do you fix it? You know, what's being said inside of the building right now? I think our next guest should have a pretty good pulse on all those questions. Three-time Pro Bowler, won a Super Bowl as well back in the day, not with Philly, but eight terrific years as an outstanding linebacker in Philly, an outspoken guy. We've had him on the show before. Seth Joyner. Seth, what's going on, man? How you doing today?
All good, fellas. How y'all doing today?
Awesome, buddy. Happy New Year to you.
Fantastic. How do you fix this in Philadelphia? Because it feels like 3 years ago, you're celebrating a championship. Now you're looking for a new head coach. And it went awry really quickly. What's the consensus in Philly to make this thing right?
Yeah, how many hours you guys got? Not good. How to make it right? Well, the owner has made a decision to make a change. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully he's got a plan on how to make it right. You know, from my perspective, you know, a couple of things need to happen. You got to start with the quarterback because obviously that's the most important position on the field. There's been reports that Carson didn't want to be there. Doug was going to continue on as the head coach, you know, reports. I don't know that to be true. There was also a report that Carson didn't want to compete with Jalen Hurts for the starting job. He felt like it was his team, and he was a little upset about being pulled. Mm. So you start there. You know, in my opinion, every other position on the field has to compete for a starting job. And had Carson Wentz, you know, elevated his play to the level that, you know, the Eagles expected him to when they extended him last year, you know, we wouldn't be having these conversations. But he's brought that into the fray. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, you just spend a second-round pick on Jalen Hurts. If you can't, you know, if your decision is to keep Carson and you can't move Jalen for that, for an equivalent pick or better, then you don't move him. In my opinion, I think that, you know, because the contract doesn't kick in until this upcoming to 2001 anyway, you keep both of them on the roster and you create going to training camp next year. And you allow them to compete for the starting job and the best man wins. At every other position, it's a meritocracy. That's the way it normally is.
Yeah.
With the quarterback position, it's normally different. You know, you draft a guy, you give him the job, and he's got to fail miserably, you know, to lose the job. But I think the competition will bring out the best in both of them. The cream will rise to the top, and you will find who your quarterback is going to be. And if Carson's not, you know, amiable to that, then I think, you know, you really got to think about whether that guy is the guy you thought he could be.
Seth, let me just roll it back for a second. And great start. Very interesting the way you lay that out. But I want to get you on record. Do you believe Doug Peterson deserved to get fired?
Well, I think Doug contributed to, you know, to the situation this year, particularly, you know, with his play calling. He just refused to change. Mm-hmm. If you look at their run-pass ratio, you know, they were 2-1 or greater, probably, you know, 65-35, you know, pass to run. When your quarterback is struggling, the best thing that you can do, you protect them two ways. You either protect them with great offensive line play. We knew that wasn't going to happen because four-fifths of your offensive line was out for the majority of the year.
Yeah.
Or you protect your quarterback by running the football and utilizing play-action pass, bootlegs, misdirection, all of those things that allows him to either get out of the pocket or you buy him extra time. Doug refused to do those things. So I think that, you know, he had a hand in his own demise. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, you know, Doug is, you know, was put in a precarious position. I don't know that, you know, you got to go back and think about all the dynamics that surrounds Doug Peterson's hiring. You know, he was the last guy that they interviewed. He was all the other candidates that they interviewed before him had already been hired. Jim Schwartz had already been hired as the defense coordinator before they hired Doug to be the head coach. And you got to consider Howie Roseman's position. Chip Kelly had relegated him to the back office somewhere. And then once he was back in power, I'm of the opinion he was never going to hire someone with the type of power to supersede his power ever again.
It's interesting.
So Doug Peterson has always been in a precarious position. I've always felt for him because I always felt like, you know, there were decisions being made and moves being made, and Doug Peterson was always thrust out to the front to have to answer for what was being done, even if he wasn't on board with it.
Gotcha.
So he was the fall guy.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that he deserved to be fired, but, you know, he kind of knew going in what the circumstances were going to be.
No, that's interesting.
Go ahead, Teak. I was going to say Seth Joyner's with us, former Eagle great. He's with us here on Teak and Tierney. Go ahead, Teak.
Well, now that he is fired, who is the right substitute? I mean, the replacement for him. You know, Deuce Daly, who was a running back, and BT and I were talking earlier about running backs often, you know, the perception is that they're just not football IQ enough to be a head coach, even though I think it's a false narrative. And he's survived now four regimens because he was there with Andy Reid as well, and looks like he'll probably still be there. Could he be a head coaching candidate? And if not, who best can do this in Philly? Because it's not an easy town to be a head coach.
Listen, at every turn, when Doug Peterson has replaced his offensive coordinator, even though he was the guy that was making the calls, I lobbied for Deuce Staley to be his offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. This transition for him would have been seamless if he would have had that position. Now, I don't know what the hierarchy is when we're creating game plans and when everybody's on the headset, you know, everyone's talking about what the play is that we're going to run. I'm not privy to that.
Yeah.
But I know that Deuce Staley has been there a long time. I know that Jeffrey Lurie has inhibited his ability to move on numerous occasions.
To a different team, you mean?
To different teams to assume an offensive coordinator position. And they've compensated him, I would assume, handsomely to force him to stay. But this is the point in time where a guy who's dedicated not only, you know, his time as a player, but numerous years to that organization, that he deserves an opportunity to step to the forefront and lead this team. Hmm. And numerous players vouch for him, even players that are on the roster and players that have been there, that have left, they vouch for him. He deserves that opportunity to step forward. Now, whether he'll get it or not, that's a whole different set of circumstances because whoever takes over has got to realize that, you know, there is a guy and Howie Roseman is going to have final say on everything.
Yep,
the other thing is, you know, you come in, and when you listen to Jeffrey Lurie's press conference yesterday, and I listened to the whole thing, and when I got done, I had 5 pages worth of notes, and I was just blown away by, you know, the commentary and the things that he was throwing out there.
In a good way or a bad way?
Well, I mean, some good, a lot bad. I just feel like, you know, listen, owners never come out and say, hey, we're in rebuild mode.
Mm-hmm.
They always use terms like retool, we're in transition period. This is, you know, we're in a transition period. But for the sake of the fans, they can't come out and say, hey, listen, we're going to
we're going to suck. We're going to suck for 2 years.
Yeah.
You can't say
that. but I mean, but he said it.
Yeah.
He said it. He said the fundamental difference between where Doug Peterson is, Doug Peterson knows that, you know, by next year, his seat is going to be really hot. So if we're talking about midterm to long term, that doesn't suit him well.
Yeah.
Because when the team doesn't play well next year, everyone's going to be calling for his head. He said, but where we are, you know, Doug Peterson is concerned with short to midterm. But where we are, we're concerned with the midterm to long term, what we're going to look like 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, quote unquote.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
told me that this team is in rebuild mode, so you got to have a coach who's in line with that and understands that, you know what, hey, it may take 2 to 3 years to turn this around. Mm-hmm. Will the media and the city, you know, be on board with that? Will the ownership, you know, stay true to their word and be on board with that? Or will I, you know, get the team to the precipice like a Tony Dungy and then have it handed off to someone else, you know, to relish in the bask in the success that I've helped create.
Yeah.
So I mean, all of those things as a head coach, you gotta consider those things. And for me, it's a tall order for any guy who's an authoritative figure and a guy that's highly competitive that wants to win right now. That's a tall order. It's going to be tough for them to find that right guy.
Yeah, that is. It sounds like, you know, maybe a Marvin Lewis who's done it before, and it doesn't necessarily have an urgency to prove himself, right? It almost feels like you need that kind of coach who's going to be okay with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know.
Even though it's not going to excite Philadelphia Eagle fans.
It probably wouldn't. I don't know that there's a hire that would excite them right out of the gate. If any of them had been able to read between the lines and understand, you know, that this transition period means rebuild. The other thing is, you know, he was asked yesterday about minority coaches, and, you know, they've already asked to speak with Robert Saleh and Eric Bieniemy. Just a heads up, I have an issue with, you know, the way in which African-American coaches get their opportunities to coach. When you look at most of them, they get an opportunity to coach a team that, A, doesn't have a franchise quarterback, that's devoid of talent, you know, and it's a 3 to 5 year deal, you know. And that is troublesome to me. You don't see very many African-American coaches get a team that's got an established franchise quarterback, and, you know, you just need to come in and culturally and structurally redo what the problems are, you know. So, I mean, a guy like Marvin Lewis, he's got to be, you know, very aware of that, just looking at, you know, what happened with Hugh Jackson, you know, and with the Browns. Hugh spent a couple of years there. They got the talent level where they need to get it, and they snatched the rug out from under them and handed it to someone else. And look, now, you know, 2-3 years later, the Browns are now in the playoffs and won a playoff game for the first time in 18 years. So, I mean, I'm looking at the broad picture. I'm looking at it from every conceivable angle that you can look at. This is going to be a tough hire, you know, for the Eagles, and it's going to be a tough job for anyone who assumes the job and steps into that role, because it's not going to be easy to turn this around.
That's what we were saying before. I think it's maybe the toughest of the seven, and we're talking for the reasons that you just chronicled. Seth, join us with us here on Tiki and Tierney. I just want to take it back to Wentz for a second, because when you do a national show, and Tiki does, you know, local stuff here. I did local radio for a long time. When you're doing local radio, you absolutely know what's going on in the locker room, because you know you're at the games, you know guys on the team, you have your sources, you know the deal. When you sit and you do a national show, much more speculatory, much more conjecture, and that could be a little bit off base. We could be wrong. So I want to make sure I'm fair. My read during the season, I was unimpressed with how Carson Wentz was handling the ascension of Jalen Hurts. He struck me as a guy who wasn't being a great teammate, a guy who was being a little petulant, a little selfish, and I said that on the air. Was I wrong when I said that?
Well, from everything that you heard coming out of the locker room, that certainly was the case. I mean, he was very engaged on game days, you know, from the Saints game forward, with Jalen and the process of everything that was going on. So, you know, you would look at the situation and believe that that wasn't necessarily the case. But, Tiki, you know just as well as I do, you know, as a competitor, you know, if you're in a situation where, you know, they've taken your job and you're watching a guy out there, you know, getting done what it is that you were supposed to be getting done and it's supposed to be your team, you it's got to make you feel some type of way.
Yep.
I mean, he's been – and it's not the first time he's been through that. He's been through that with Nick Foles.
That's right.
But I don't think, you know – listen, Doug was a player's coach, and he's the type of guy that's going to sit and talk with his players and especially his leaders to lead the young guys and be like, hey, we want to say all the right things. We want to do all the right things. Carson, you need to act the right way because the eyes are going to be on you. The minute that Jalen takes the field as the starter, everyone's going to be watching because everybody wants to see how you're handling the situation. Are you going to be a good teammate? Are you going to be a professional about it? Are you going to step to the forefront and be, you know, a team guy instead of sulking? Because, quite frankly, he found himself in that position because of his play on the field. So, you know, I, to be honest with you, you know, I don't know because it's hard to say. I conjecturally, I can sit back, you know, and have an opinion about what I think and what I believe about Carson Wentz and the whole situation. But quite frankly, you know, we've heard all these reports from, you know, he's upset, he doesn't want to be here, he wants to be traded, he doesn't like Doug. you know, but because Carson never stepped to the podium at the end of the year, those questions weren't able to be lobbied in his direction to get some feel for really what the truth was. But when things start to come out, you know, that came out the last couple of games of the season where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, things don't get out. My agent doesn't step out in front of me and make comments without first having, you know, talk to me about it 100%. And then having my okay to release that information.
That's right.
Now, I'm not saying his agents did, but the information that got out, the sources was like, oh, it came from a source. Well, who's the only source?
Yeah.
Carson Wentz is the source, or his people are the source. And the thing was, he wants out. If he wants out, the only person that can come from is either him or his people.
Yeah.
So where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire. And sometimes all you need to do is plant a little seed, a little mustard seed, to get the biggest tree there ever is.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. Well, yeah. I mean, listen, Seth, this is going to be a really interesting offseason. Thank God Eagle fans are at least somewhat placated by the championship. Otherwise, they'd be at, I mean, I don't know how much longer that's going to last, but they would be out of their minds if they didn't win a couple of years ago. So,
they're no longer placated.
Okay.
I can promise you, the city of Philadelphia talk radio is chaotic right now.
You got to love it. You got to love the passion.
Seth,
I love it.
Seth, 10 seconds. Are they saying about Doug Peterson, good riddance, or thank you for getting us a championship?
The fans?
I think it's split. I really think it's split. I think there's some people that are like, you know, how do you fire a guy who won your first Super Bowl in the modern era in the history of the organization?
Yeah.
That took a team to the playoffs 3 out of his 5 years. You know, how do you fire that guy? And then there are people that were just fed up with the play calling and the over aggressiveness on fourth downs and going for two in situations where you should have just taken the extra point. You know, I think, you know, it's split. There's a lot of people that love him, and there's a lot of people that's happy to see him go.
Yeah, that's good. Philly.
That is a good sense of what's going down in a very very tough city, but a passionate city. Good stuff. Appreciate you hopping on. Seth Joyner, awesome conversation. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Seth.
You got it, guys.
That was good. That was really pretty much it. Everything you needed to know, Seth gave you nice intel on that, right, T?
Yeah, he did. No, he's great, man. He's got good opinions, and he's informed, and he says it like it is. He's definitely right. Carson could have – we said this weeks ago, BT. He could have calmed all of this nonsense just by saying something. Mm-hmm. He never said anything. Still hasn't said anything.
I'm sorry, Teague. And to not go – I know he's not the starter right now, so maybe not technically required.
Yeah.
To not go for the end-of-the-year media session is weak.
Agreed.
That is weak. All right, let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back. We'll hit you with the blast. Rich Ackerman right now. Here he is. All right, Tiki and Tierney back. A lot of good stuff today. We were bouncing around, and we had a great conversation. Kyrie Irving, that was around 4 Eastern. Obviously started the championship game last night, bounced around into some of the draft portfolios, the, you know, what just where some of these players could go, whether it's Devontae Smith or, of course, Justin Fields is the quarterback here. It's all going to be up on YouTube, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Seth Joyner, just money on, you know, breaking down the Eagles situation. So far, so good. Tiki, you ready to hammer home the blast? See what we got?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, so after losing the AFC wildcard game, I actually said this on the air yesterday. This is pretty amazing. Offensive lineman Jared Veldheer is using a unique loophole. Signed with the Packers, eligible to play in a playoff game, but he already played in one. That's never happened before. 2 teams in the same year. Should he be allowed to play?
Yeah, of course. This is an odd season for everyone in the NFL, and especially teams that are having outbreaks. And look, we hear some of them. We don't hear all of them that go forward, especially practice squads or, you know, say a backup, for instance. So I think absolutely this is I think really anything should go this season as far as player movement because of the coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to agree, and I guess I will. I don't need to be, you know, not confrontational, but not even contrarian, because it wouldn't be necessarily being contrarian just for being a contrarian. Like, I could make a real point that the NFL got kind of lucky here because they're in different conferences.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing you want is a situation. Like, imagine if you play a team in the AFC Championship game and that guy loses, or the divisional round, I should say, and that guy loses, and the next week he's on the other team in the AFC Championship game. Like, I know it's quirky. It works out because he was on the Colts. Now he's on the Packers. I understand. And I'm not really that opposed to it, but yeah, a one-year loophole, obviously, with the pandemic. I can't get too nuts. All right, 10 seasons in the NFL. 32-year-old offensive tackle, former first-rounder Anthony Costanzo announces retirement today. This just 2 years after Luck retired, as we know. So should the Colts look at a young-term quarterback option next year or a short-term vet yet again like Rivers? Well, I mean, you know, Rivers was pretty good against Buffalo, despite the fact that Hail Mary came up 3, 4, 5 yards a little bit short there. They also, mm-hmm. you know, didn't, I don't know if they got every whistle their way necessarily, but I don't know that you run it. But first of all, I don't think he's going to play, so I don't know that they're going to be forced with this decision. I think, and we said this the other day too, he's going to probably go and coach high school football, and that's where he's going to wind up. He said it, and
yeah.
you know, if he's done playing football, that's where he's going to be. I think that if he does want to come back, which I doubt, that's a tough decision for the Colts because I think with this market, which could be interesting, you might be able to do a little bit better than Phillip Rivers at this point.
Yeah, no, I think you go for the vet, but the vet is not necessarily going to be, you know, an aged, he's moving off from his team because he's been there too long type of player. It could be Marcus Mariota, could be Jameis Winston. Who knows? These guys are free agents.
Could be Jimmy G if Jimmy G shakes
free. Jimmy Garoppolo as well. You could get a Stafford if they decide they want to move him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You could get a vet, and I think that's the better route than going young and just hoping that you pick a guy and you develop him well.
Yeah, because their trajectory is kind of now. They've got a pretty good team, and those growing pains could derail it. And then by the time the quarterback's ready, the rest of the team might be little aged out in certain spots. Financial ramifications, whatever. All right, in the Wizards' win over the Suns last night, now Bradley Beal, who has been great, dropped 34 while Devin Booker cooked with 33. If you had, well, that's easy. If you had to pick one of these players to build around, who you got? You going with Beal or you going with Booker?
I'm going Booker. I mean, he's young. He's engaging. We saw it in the bubble at the end of last season. You're going to go with Booker because he hasn't reached the full potential of his game yet.
Yep.
Beal, we know who he is. I like him a lot, but this is an easy one. It's Booker.
It's absolutely Booker. That's not to say that, you know, I love Beal. Whenever Bradley Beal's name comes up, you know, if he ever wound up in the right situation, I think that those who aren't fully sold, and
yeah.
I mean, you should be because he's a terrific player, but maybe fringe fans don't realize how good he is because they haven't won much.
Yeah.
If he was ever in the right, I don't even mean like the Warriors, right?
Yeah.
But it's just a even if he, you know what?
We're like willing him to a contender.
I have a good team for you.
Go ahead.
I'd love to see him on Minnesota with those young guys.
Ah, it's interesting.
You got a big with Cat. You got some other players. Edwards, obviously, just drafted. Like, if you get him in a spot there, he's going to the playoffs, and he's going to do some damage. So I like Beal, but my choice would be absolutely Booker. Booker he's borderline. I mean, they're both borderline great. I prefer Booker. All right. Aside from Atlanta's 112-94 win over shorthanded Philly last night, Hawks big man John Collins reportedly called out Trae Young over the weekend on how he runs the offense, rushing offensive sets, shooting too early in the possession. As good as Trae Young is, do the Hawks need to be more versatile on offense? I don't know if they need to be more versatile. They need to be better coached in terms of discipline. They need to be that. And I said this because they just played the Nets and they just played the Knicks. And I watched both of those games. And, I mean, this guy's coming down, pulling up at the logo, basically, 40 feet away. I mean, with 18 on the shot clock, I literally tweeted that. That was the Net game, not even the Knicks game. I was watching against the Nets. I tweeted that. I took a shot of the picture. I'm like, 18 seconds to go. This is a horrendous shot. I don't care if he makes it. There's nobody that can convince me that's a good shot. If you allow that, you know what? Residually, the rest of the team's going to be unhappy. He's a chucker. Trae Young is good, but he is a chucker.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you're right about the coaching side of this, BT, and I'm just looking at the roster trying to figure out.
They have a good roster.
They do have a good roster, but I'm trying to figure out how you take the ball out of his hands sometimes. Right, because Rondo coming off the bench, even though he's hurt right now, but you know, who can handle the ball also, You know, because right now it's Trae Young. So he's initiating the offense. He's doing what he wants. Cam Reddish is more of the shooter. DeAndre Hopkins is more he's small forward guy. Like
Bogdanovich,
yeah,
Collins.
Like, there's not really an option.
Danilo Gallinari's hurt.
Yeah, there's not really an option to take it out of his hands. So, and leave him off the ball sometimes because he could be a shooter, right? He could be that too for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you need someone to come handle it for you. And I don't know if that might be what they're missing a little bit right now as they try to develop Trae Young.
But I don't know if Collins is talking about like dribble rate necessarily. Like, I don't think that Collins has an issue with him dominating the ball. I mean, to me,
no. But I'm talking about someone who just initiates offense better than he does.
Well, Trae Young could initiate the offense better if you make sure that he does when you give him this green light to do whatever he wants.
But he's not.
He did in college.
I know, but I think that's what John Collins is saying. He's not initiating the offense. He's kind of just.
But it's not because he's deficient. I think what Collins is saying, it's because he's basically a chucker. He's selfish.
Yeah.
And watching the Hawks, and I like to watch them, he is a chucker, and he is a selfish player. So that bears watching, put it that way. All right, Tico, over the weekend, our buddy Kyle Schwarber, now a National, signed
nice.
The he's an easy guy to like.
Yeah.
Had to get his act together because now suddenly he's not the rising star that he once was. 1 year, $10 million, we'd all take it. But still, can Schwarber return to being a reliable everyday player?
I mean, I'll say yeah. What is he, 32?
I was going to say, is he 32 already?
I can't remember. Maybe Sam can find
it. That actually sounds kind of right, but that just struck me. But I actually
because I remember we had him a couple years ago, right? 3 or 4 years ago, and he's 28 or 29,
yeah,
whatever
I guess
it was.
So. Remember, he was telling us he played linebacker in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he played against Braxton Miller.
That's right.
Remember he showed us the picture?
Yeah. No,
Braxton
he's only
Miller
27?
Was juking him.
He's only 27?
Yeah, 32 seemed old. Is he 27?
Maybe I'm thinking of someone else that we had on.
He's 27, 28, right?
Yeah, of course he can then. Inbound, yeah, definitely. He can return to that. There's no doubt about it. I don't know why I thought he was older.
Yeah, I initially said that seems old, but then I kind of agreed with you. So I was kind of with you. So, but initially it sounded, I didn't think 32. That seemed quick.
Mm-hmm.
I know time's flying, but that really flying. Age aside.
Yeah.
Which obviously is an important aspect of the equation, but
I only use age because it determines whether or not you can get in shape, right? The older you are, the harder it is to get back in like elite condition.
I got you. No, by the way, yes, body type is one thing. Not to shame him, I'm not going there. But
yeah, I know what you mean.
His approach needs to change a little bit. He's got to emphasize putting the bat on the ball a little bit more. I mean, when he crushes them, they go. He's got that looping, that arcy swing, but he just swings through too many, and he's not a good fielder.
But that's not what he was asked to do, though.
Well, you know somebody I mean? Better change him, or he ain't going to be a starter.
Well, that's a question. Can he?
Honestly, I would bet money against it at this point.
Oh, you hater.
I still like him, though. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you. Have a great Tuesday night. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.